John, would you like to open us in the Serenity Prayer?
Sure.
All the sorrows and soul suffering, adding focus to the room, go about Serenity Prayer. God.
God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
So I was afraid, not that you wouldn't accept me, but that I wouldn't somehow, because of a number of things outside of my control, be able to deliver to you today the things that I was meant to deliver you. Now, of course, God was laughing at this. But what I'd like to do is give a framework for perhaps a different model of anorexia that you've heard before. And then open it up for discussion. I'm going to try and keep my section of it to about 23 minutes. That'll leave 20 minutes for people to share. And the reason for, if you'd excuse the little academic introduction here, is because what I'm trying to create at this point within my sponsorship chain and local community, and now I'm trying to take it out a little farther, is a paradigm shift in the concept of anorexia. Anorexia is commonly used as a short term for anorexia nervosa, which is a psychiatric diagnosis for an eating disorder characterized by body image distortion leading to an obsession with maintaining extremely low body fat. Within the recovery movement, it's the compulsive inability to give or receive love, affection, appreciation, these sorts of things in a natural God-given way. The Greek root for the term is orexis, which means to reach out or strive. So if you take the A, which is, means the opposite of orexis, ia, which is a condition of, it would be the condition of not being able to reach, to stretch out, to bring oneself into, extend oneself into another. And that actually is kind of telltale if we look at that history of the word. And it kind of explains why the word anorexia sounds so good when we use it for what we've experienced, even though the anorexia nervosa is the common term used by the world around us. So, you know, it's a good word for what we've experienced. But I'd like to talk about something that actually came up at the ABM and some questions that occurred there. It's actually central to the question of anorexia in SLAA, and that is anorexia an addiction by itself? First, I'd like to point out that there's a difference between compulsion and an addiction. And the normal paradigm for thinking of anorexia in the psychiatric community right now is that anorexia is a compulsion and it's the opposite of addiction. A lot of people feel that the disease concept of addiction came from William Wilson and Dr. Silkworth and those people who are referenced in the AA early materials. But it actually started much sooner than that, probably about 1000 BC was the first writing that I've found on addiction. And it was popularized just in this country by Dr. Benjamin Rush in the book, in his 1812 work, Diseases of the Mind. There's a chapter called Diseases of the Will. And he picks alcoholism and compulsive gambling as two examples of diseases of the will, which is very consistent with the paradigm that Wilson came up with, that when people tried to stop drinking, they found they couldn't, and that was the one test for alcoholism. If you apply that to sex and love addiction, if people are living out a pattern that there's a particular signature for addiction. I'd like to state that my view of addiction is that addiction is invisible. All we ever see is the signature of addiction. We can't examine addiction under a microscope, and although the University of Southern California, Berkeley, has taken pictures of the brain secretions at the cellular level, that occur under when people are in kind of getting a hit from whatever their addiction is, whether it's a biochemical substance that they ingest or some sort of behavioral pattern like we deal with here in SLAA, that the actual pattern that goes on electrochemically is essentially invisible. All it leaves behind is a signature. And in terms of what we see in our own behavior when we look in the mirror, when we look at a loved one who is suffering from some form of addiction, all we ever get to see is the signature of addiction, not addiction itself. That addiction is actually a biochemical and electrical pattern that occurs where a person, instead of adapting to a situation, does not adapt to the situation, actually spins out in some sort of self-destructive pattern. The signature is characterized by three things: disruption, like of life or goals or something like that; resolution, meaning that the person resolves, makes a resolve to stop whatever it was that was disrupting their life; and then reemergence, and that is that somehow the resolution is forgotten. The long-term effects are that slowly the element of surprise, like, God, I did that again, I can't believe it. After a while, it's like, oh, I did that again, that's very believable, you know. And then, you know, in the letter that Silkworth wrote at the beginning of the AA Big Book, it talks about suicide, making the supreme sacrifice. So it eventually leads to nihilism, which is just to believe that nothing matters. We can't get ahead anyway, so why even try anything anymore, you know? And I would say that nihilism is the center of anorexia, really. It's like, we can't ever make progress with relationships. We can't ever find healthy sexuality. We can't ever find emotional intimacy without danger. And so why try? So that's kind of the disease concept perspective behind this model I'm going to propose. Using SLAA's definition, recovery from anorexia would be characterized by the emergence of an ability to give and receive love. Give and receive love, affection, appreciation. Using the etymological definition that came up from the word study, it would be recovery from anorexia is characterized by the emergence of an ability to reach out. Now that one to me is the simplest to understand, the ability to reach out. The signs would be feeling a sense of appreciation towards each other person, confidence and decision in our decision to partner with others socially, emotionally, financially, intellectually, with regard to residence, moving in with someone, starting a family, these sorts of things would become things that we are now capable of doing when we once weren't capable of doing them. If you subscribe to what I'm suggesting, that perhaps anorexia is actually an addictive pattern, that it has all the same characteristics, the signature things, and we'll go into that in just a moment. Combining a couple of models, Stephen Covey's model of interdependence, some CODA recovery concepts, and a whole bunch of concepts out of our SLAA materials, I would suggest that dependency is more than reliance. It's relinquishing control to another person out of our own weakness. That's what I would say dependence is. Independence is when we gain strength to take care of ourselves, and we gain the ability to survive without others. And I guess the question that I would have is, do we ever really achieve independence, ever really, in our life, complete independence? And is that so you know, as what Covey would say is, as we grow up, we move from a model of dependence to independence. But then he points out that there's limitations to independence. For one thing, you know, we have to get food and we can't get it all ourselves, and we have to, you know, get electricity, so somebody has to. I mean, we have to be interdependent with society in order to survive, just physically, let alone emotionally or intellectually or creatively, artistically. So we move into this point as we reach adulthood. If we're not caught up in addiction, the normal kind of passage through life is that we reach a point where we're fairly independent, perhaps financially and emotionally. We have a good sense of self, and then we realize that there's limits to it, that we can't move past certain things unless we develop interdependence with other people and we start looking for partnerships. It may be through marriage, it may be through business partnerships, or developing certain types of friendships that are beyond the, you know, the high school type of friendship, where there's more depth to the relationship than just kind of surviving through the high school experience. But the preconditions to interdependence is that, first of all, we have to achieve independence first. We have to get to a point where we have some adequate level of independence. We have to be able to care for ourselves physically, have some emotional and financial stability within the community. So when we get to that point, we're capable of interdependence and we can start forming those mutual relationships. Now, many, myself included, did not get to that point of developing independence and then interdependence because I started to go into codependence. And I did that starting at a very young age. And I was not able to move into higher things. So like codependence I see as the breakdown of the normal healthy development process towards interdependence. Somehow or another, I moved off in a direction that was different, and it was the addictive patterns that were forming in my life that kept me from doing that. And so codependence is the only direction I could go. Now, it wasn't my choice. It was the only direction I could go. It was a direct result of addictive patterns in my life. And, you know, it was caused by the addiction, disconnection with God, undeveloped independence, vanity. I mean, just a whole host of things that caused me to go in a direction that was not the higher thing that, according to Covey's model. But I would step one step beyond Covey's model and look at spirituality as even a higher thing, and that's where the term tapestry came in and the title of this little educational section, and then, you know, some sharing afterwards. And to me, the higher things is a recognition of my own intrinsic God-given value and the intrinsic God-given value of other people. When I say intrinsic, I mean it's not something I can take away from myself. I cannot reduce my value through any means humanly possible. No matter what I do, say, think, feel, I am still valuable. And you know, it was kind of a radical concept, and really one of the reasons that, you know, to bring a model that sometimes people are uncomfortable about into the thing, but the idea of God as an idealized loving parent, and that we're all children of God, that idea, I mean, you know, people got killed in the past over that idea, and I think it's a kind of a radical idea. But it brings us to a higher plane, because then when I, you know, develop a relationship with a person, you know, then I'm seeing an intrinsic value that I have and an intrinsic value that you have. And it changes the whole thing, because it's not like, how can I use you or how can you use me or something. There's some sort of higher thing that's going on, and we're living in that pool of importance assigned to us by some higher plane, by some higher being, higher power, however you want to, you know, God, you know, if you will. So that's, for me, where I would like to be, is in that plane. In recovery, and I think that many of you probably feel the same way, that you'd like to be in the plane of interdependence with other people and not codependence, that you'd like to be in the plane of like God-centered relationships and so forth, rather than you know, maybe self-centered relationships, or you know, how can we get the most out of this relationship kind of space. So the tapestry is surrounding the ideas of friendship, living in community, collaboration, team spirit. I want to tell you a story about team spirit. Here's how I was introduced to team spirit. I was on a winning track team in high school, and I was running down the track. And although in my head I would never have guessed that the rest of the team would do the same thing they did to everyone else who ran on our track team, but they did it for me too. They stood at the sidelines and cheered me on. And I was running the race towards the goal line, and everyone on my team, all like 300 of them, were cheering me on towards the goal. That was team spirit. And you could always feel it when you went onto the track and into the track and field with the team that I was a part of. And we won every single meet we went to, because there was that kind of spirit. And that's the kind of spirit that I missed when I kind of fell into my addictive fall later on in my teens, and didn't find again until I appeared in a room of recovery 11 years later. But authentic love, truly appreciating the other person as part of the spiritual tapestry, interest in knowing another person, knowing another person, being present for another person, and fostering strength rather than weakness. One of the things that I've noticed in sponsoring and counseling people, both professionally and through religious organizations and so forth, is that codependent relationships are usually characterized by people trying to foster the weakness of the other party rather than the strength. Because to create strength in the other party, or to be a catalyst for strength in the other party, is to lose the other party. And so part of that acquisition mindset is to weaken the other party. That's why you hear stories of, you know, no, I don't want you to go to school, no, I don't want you to go to the workforce, no, I don't want you to do this, I don't want you to do that kind of thing. I don't want you to talk to other people, you know. And you get the A-B scenario that it talks about in our SLA big book when that goes on for long enough. If you don't know what I mean, read the section on relationships in the big book. So how do we bring God into sexuality and into romantic interdependence that has been distorted by addiction? And that's a big question, and maybe some of you came to this group, this workshop, specifically so that you could find the answer to that question. How do I bring God into sexuality? How do I bring God into a romantic partnership? And that's a good question. Let me just start at the kind of the seed of the thing, and just for a moment state that masturbation in the model that we just discussed, in a person whose modesty and balance has not been compromised by addiction, masturbation would fall under the model as an independent, healthy activity. Because you're essentially, it's an independent, healthy activity. And notice I said healthy activity. And this is for a person whose modesty and balance has not been compromised by addiction. So some of you have masturbation on your bottom line, I understand that. But for those people who haven't had their normal patterns compromised, it would be a healthy activity. And some of the sources for misunderstanding around masturbation come from the secrecy that surrounds masturbation culturally, especially in the United States and probably South America too. Not so much in Europe, certain parts of Asia. But there are a lot of cultures in the world where masturbation is not a secret event like it is in the puritanical culture that has permeated much of the eastern seaboard and parts of the rest of the country. What they call eisegesis of the Bible. Exegesis is reading out of ancient scriptures what is actually there. Eisegesis is reading into ancient scriptures what isn't there. And a lot of the comments I've heard of and from counseling people where they had decided that masturbation was a sin somehow, and I would ask them to, you know, like, where did you get that from? And it always is some ridiculous misrepresentation of what they read. So you know, we're left with that masturbation from, if you study it all in to any depth, masturbation is a healthy human endeavor for those people for whom it has not become an addictive pattern that they have to put on their bottom line. Unhealthy patterns of sexual relationship are obviously dependence and codependence, but if you move into the realm of interdependence, now that you move out of the realm of masturbation, you move into the realm of, like, back to where we were before, a mutual decision to work together towards a common goal. And that common goal might be an interest in having children, or might be an interest in becoming creative in our own physical attentiveness toward one another. And these are healthy, interdependent forms of sexuality where God can be in the room during the sexual experience. And I've experienced that myself. It's a completely different experience than what I experienced when I was following some sort of addictive pattern. So how do sex and love addicts in recovery actually get there? If you look at the old model of anorexia, there's an apparent collision between the two recoveries. Recovery from anorexia is a threat to recovery from addiction. And recovery from addiction is a threat to recovery from anorexia. So you hear people talking about balance between the two. I've completely abandoned that perspective for myself. I don't think that there's symmetry between the two things. Are anorexia and addiction actually opposites? That's the question I would pose. So if we apply Dr. Rush's model of addiction, does an anorexic behavior have that disease of the will kind of aspect to it? Do we will to reach out and to another and develop intimacy and find that we cannot? And does that happen repeatedly?
Yes.
So if that's the pattern that we see, then it's more of an addiction rather than an anti-addiction. And that's the paradigm shift that I'm proposing, really. What brings about recovery from one brings about the recovery from the other. Realigning our personal purpose underneath something of higher nature. So, you know, we move away from nihilism and nothing matters because nothing matters kind of thinking to there is something that matters, and there's, you know, I have a passion for life and I have a reason for being here, and now I can align my lifestyle and my time management and my interaction with other people and my relationships underneath that higher purpose of maybe to, you know, love, to learn how to authentically love, or maybe, you know, to learn to create something that is a contribution to humanity or something, whatever it is that we discover in our own personal spiritual path that we see as this higher goal, managing our time in that direction. And the Oxford Group's maintenance of intention through Getting Current. A lot of people think Getting Current started in SLA. It didn't. It started pre-AA in the Oxford Groups. They used to get together to talk about what their temptations were. And it was, you know, one person talked and the other people listened. They used to do it that way in that what they called house parties way back then. Now, they had a different goal in mind. They were looking for purity of heart. We do that through step 6 and 7 to some degree, and maybe again in step 10. But nonetheless, the practice came from those groups. So the new model that I'm proposing for anorexia and how it relates to addiction is that they are asymmetric. That the symmetry that has been suggested in the past is mostly an illusion. And that the reason that they coexist, that anorexia and addiction tend to coexist inside of us in SLAA, is that acting out is anorexic. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to give you some examples. But before I do, let me just say this. Acting out may seem like it's reaching for something, but it's not reaching very far. It's usually short-sighted and narrow-minded. Okay? When we're acting out, everything we're going for is short-sighted and narrow-minded. So it's not really reaching out. It only has the illusion of reaching out. So anorexic behavior has these signatures of addiction. Disruption of love. There's the disruption. Resolution that we will reach out for intimacy. We'll make it to that party. We're going to get dressed. We're going to go out. We're going to have fun. Blah, 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 blah. We're going to, you know, try this relationship. It's going to work. It's really going to work this time. I'm going to do all the things I'm supposed to do. We're going to develop intimacy. Blah, 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 blah. You know, all these different things. These things that we want to do. We're going to be social. We're going to be emotionally present. And then all of a sudden, we're back in a workaholic pattern again. And then like a year later, we go, I vaguely remember thinking that I was going to become intimate with people again and be present in social situations, and I seem to have forgotten that I was going to do that. So ultimately, anorexic behavior has the signature of addiction because it has the disruption, the resolution, and the reemergence, all of those main characteristics that have a signature. Addictive fantasy, romantic intrigue, addictive sexual escapades are essentially antisocial. They are practices of interactions without intimacy. So I'm going to kind of go to open it up here. I had some examples I was going to give, but I'm getting from the nods of everyone and the fact that it's already 2:31, and I want to leave 20 minutes for people to share. You got it already, I think. But so I'd like to keep the. I mean, if you have to talk about whatever you have to talk about, that's fine with me. I'd like to challenge you to think about in your own behavior how acting out was actually anorexic, and how bring spirituality in your life to recover from the addictive part, the addictive acting out, is actually challenging you to kind of a prerequisite for really enjoying recovery from sex and love addiction, to actually become more available to other people and actually opening up more. And that's why I use the term, you know, tapestry. I mean, think of a blooming flower, and you know, so like you think of a flower that's kind of like this, you know, and that's the anorexic person, and that's also the addict, and the addict and the anorexic person are one and the same. And then you know, there's like kind of an opening up that allows the person to, you know, take in other people and listen to other people and be known. And that's what I like to propose, that happens together. The two things have to happen together, or we end up abstinent from everything. And that's just not going to be something that's going to motivate you to stay in SLA recovery for very long. So that's my lead. Yes?
I just want to say, I'm Amanda.
Hi, Amanda.
Grateful in our fellowship in Gainesville, and in my sponsor, she really impressed upon me, because I came in identifying as an anorexic, not as a sex and love addict, and then came to find that, oh, I think I have sex and love addiction too. But she really impressed upon me and really stuck close to the pamphlet that anorexia is just, well, is the other side of the addiction. It's still an addiction. So for me, the same results happen. I get the same hit from being anorexic that I did from acting out, and from acting out in the traditional sense, if that's a word I can use. And so all the times that I, you know, wouldn't pick up the phone, or that I compulsively worked, or all those things, or all the addiction, just this doesn't look the same. It's the same addiction for me. And I also know that I'm now in a relationship. I just moved in with my boyfriend, which I never would have, like, that's unheard of. That's like the opposite of what I used to do. But I can only do it one day at a time, because I have no idea what I'm doing. I just keep showing up, and then it just keeps happening.
Thanks.
Christine says a love addict and anorexic.
Hi, Christine.
I remember specifically one time where I was in a new relationship, and I was at this guy's parents' place, and I didn't want to sleep with the guy. But I could not take the risk of saying no and feel rejected. And I just basically didn't want to be myself and fear everything that I fear about what can happen if I'm just myself. So I just go on and sleep with him. And that was typical of acting out my anorexia, my fear of just opening up and be myself and just stay there and see what happens. I would just not take the risk. And I went into the opposite way also, because I got sick of doing that. And every time I could just say no, and I just gave me such a hit of being in control and being totally independent. I don't need anybody. And I've been in this program for 5 years, and I'm just beginning to work on my anorexia, because the first years of my recovery, I just wanted to stay out of relationships just to get back a sense of myself. Now I have become gradually more open to opening up, but the old reflex are still there. So I really need still to learn into the learning about intimacy, just basically staying there with my higher power and trust that who I am is just fine. And I just want to finish with this. What I'm so afraid of is just an illusion, because every time I stand for myself, I'm there for myself, so I'm not losing anything, and it's just what I give to myself is far more nourishing than whatever I can expect from somebody else. Thank you.
Thanks, Christine.
My name's Jan, I'm from Florida.
And Jan,
for me, my experience coming in here, and I've observed it in others in the first couple of years, you know, coming out of a compulsive relationship with someone who is not available, then, you know, the second year, really just doing the 180 and really having anorexic behavior, which manifests workaholism or what have you. I can turn any behavior into something that's anorexic, keeping myself disconnected from myself and others, my higher power. And for me, the compulsive relationship is that. And so I see it truly as a compendium of a 180. I believe in what the pamphlet says, how it says, you know, we believe that all these behaviors will distill down into that whole anorexia state. And that certainly has been true for me and what I've observed with others. And for me, it's like, you know, I know when I'm in addiction mode when I perceive I don't have a choice. And my goal truly is neutrality. And when I am able to be more in a sense of neutrality, and I'm able to identify my options, and I'm really able to live my life with choice. And that's, for me, having a sober life. And, you know, and I'm really grateful for the topic of anorexia, because I think, you know, it's truly, I've handled my addictions in order of their lethality, and they all really distill down into this particular one, being disconnected from myself and others, higher power. So I really do believe in that compendium. Just 180. And it's real interesting to watch people as they first come in getting out of compulsive behaviors and then switching over to complete anorexia. Thanks.
Thanks, Jana.
Hi, I'm Karen, sex love and relationship addict anorexia.
Hi, Karen.
And I thank you so much for the way you phrased this, because for me, anorexia and relationship addiction, although it sounds the opposite, is exactly the same thing. It took me about a year and a half or 2 years of being in this program before I realized that I am an anorexic and that it was at the root of all my acting out, that I was compulsively going from one relationship to another because I had no intimacy skills at all. I had no idea how to make friends, how to get close to anybody, and sexuality was the only thing I knew. And being close to anybody actually terrified me, but I couldn't admit that to myself even. So I portrayed this adventuresome, you know, devil may care kind of attitude, when in reality I was just afraid of being close to anybody. And when I dropped that acting out behavior, it became very apparent very quickly what was really happening to me. And even though I've been in this program for quite a while and things are going well, that's still the part of the addiction that I struggle with the most. To pick up the phone and feel that it's safe to actually reach out. So I appreciate what you said. Thank you.
Thanks, Karen.
My name is Rita, and I'm a sex and love addict.
Hi, Rita.
And when I first came into the program, I listened attentively to everyone. I went to as many meetings, retreats, conventions, and conferences in North America, because in Montreal it's very small. And I wasn't hearing what this addiction is all about. And I could identify, by listening to people, over 40 ways during 35 years I had been acting out. And so I set my bottom lines and I stopped my acting out. And what I found, though, was my true nature is to avoid things. But I found in the program, by keeping coming back, doing this service, I get to practice new behavior. And practicing new behavior is showing up for my meetings, getting a sponsor, developing that relationship with the higher power. And it's painful and uncomfortable to develop relationships with people, including my fellowship. But slowly but surely I kept doing it and I kept expanding. And the true test of how I feel my anorexia has been dealt with is this past 10 days. coming down in a car with four other people for 3 days, not getting mad, not getting testy. Of course, when you'd have getting current meetings all the time. Then, you know, 8 days of business. I mean, nonstop business meetings. And feeling centered and present and available. I was so centered and present and available, I forgot my own name at times, because it's so intense when I'm in the moment and present to myself, God, and another person. So I really believe the program is wonderful for helping us practice new behaviors and to deal with our anorexia, which maybe is the root of the whole addiction.
Thank you.
Andrew Sexton, Love Addict. I've come to understand that anorexia is just a manifestation of the addiction. And I still hear people talking about it as though it's something separate from but somehow related to. And I would just offer that the person who's promiscuous is just as anorectic as a person who's sitting home alone. That as you get healthier, you don't start acting anorectically. You're acting anorectically when you're sick. And that's what I needed to say, so I'll repeat myself.
Thank you.
Hi, Andy Sexton, Love Addict.
Hi, Andy.
That was profound for me. When I was reading through this Saturday program, and I was reading of what I was going to go to, and it said recovery from anorexia is a spiritual tapestry, and I said to someone, I don't know that that really relates to me. I was looking around at whatever else I could see, and then there was like this, come in here, you belong inside. And what you said to me really resonates, because in my relationship with my wife, as I acted out, I became totally, completely anorexic to her. I became anorexic to my relationship. I became anorexic to communicating with her. I became anorexic to myself. I became anorexic to intimacy. So it really relates very much to the person that's in a relationship during my acting out. I was so anorectic in so many different capacities. And it wasn't until the recovery process began that I could have started to peel back the layers of this anorexia and realize that it really exists in me. So I thank you very much for that. That was profound for me.
Thanks, Andy.
Thanks, Richard, Sex and Love Addict.
Hi, Richard.
I guess I'll just share maybe from the conference anorexia committee perspective. I guess members there would say, Doug, what took you so long to come to a new synthesis? I've been on the committee for a while and also serving as core liaison. There's always I think the core belief there is that anorexia is a core component of the addiction. And sometimes there's a joke, you know, people who deny that are in denial. And this also came up in the context of, we have the conference Healthy Relations Committee, which has been inactive, and interestingly, it's now being resurrected as a subcommittee of the Anorexia Committee. Because if you think about it, both groups are obviously trying to develop a healthy relationship, which suggests maybe it's the same enterprise. Now, personally, I've come to realize that when I came into the program, it's not that I became anorexic after coming to the program. It's just that I was always anorexic. It's just that after coming to the program, because the mask of addiction dropped, now my anorexic is exposed. So that's kind of how I see it now. But anyway, I can completely identify with your synthesis. Thank you. That tapestry.
I'm a sex addict and anorexic named Ray.
Hi, Ray.
This peeling of the onion almost that has come along. That, you know, when I finally got to the sexual anorexia thing being the core issue for me, you know, I realized that in my marriage for years is when it became time to be intimate, emotionally intimate, I would run, and I ran to people outside my marriage that were married people because I didn't have to be emotionally intimate with them. And that's what kept it going, and it kept me in this separation from my wife and led us to just go different directions. And it was never clear 4 years ago when this thing, when, you know, a therapist finally said, not only, you know, 10 years ago or 13 years ago, you needed to go to SLAA. Well, that was clear because I was acting out all the time. But then he comes up with this sexual anorexic term. I'm going like, hey, I act out all the time. What's that got to do with it? You know, until I got to the meeting and see the material and see how my, just what we're talking about today, which wasn't really clear. And I always love everything you do, Douglas. Thank you for serving SLAA. But that whole thing of how am I acting out is part of my sexual anorexia, is part of my avoidance of being into, of being emotionally intimate in relationships, has never been clearer. And I'm just real grateful that I know that today. It's so hard now that I'm face to face with that, figuring out how to way to work on it, because I'm extremely nervous in that when every relationship I'm in gets to that point where you're over the boundary and sexually active. You know, sexual intimacy is not an issue, because I just ramp it up, and I've said that many times, I just ramp up my sexual intimacy when it comes down to do the other. And that's my anorexic thing, acting out. Acting out is short-sighted and narrow-minded. I really like that statement that you made. That makes me think exactly what I do all the time. So thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Fred.
Hi, I'm Eve. I'm a sex and love addict and anorexic.
Hi, Eve.
I'm here today to learn more, of course, about anorexia and how to recover from it. And I worked the 12 steps on my compulsive and unhealthy relationships and then started over on specifically on anorexia, starting with step one. And so I picked up a white chip for anorexia. And then I was encouraged by my sponsor to think about a bottom line for anorexia. And that is tough because you almost need to say, I'm not gonna, you know. How do you think about that? How do you know? So I've been challenged looking at, you know, it was really helpful because in my first step, I really had to map out what my anorexia looks like. And I've heard some people talk about workaholism and isolation and all those things. So I had to really map out what it looks like. And then we sort of sat down together and I shared that with her. And then we looked at one or two things that really are the most troublesome, and then like working way too many hours. So maybe my bottom line could be I will not work past 4 p.m. every day. I start earlier than most people. You know, maybe not working till past 4 p.m. And so that's kind of where I'm at with that now. And I think for me, I agree with what has been shared about it kind of it coexisting. For me, it's about balance, and I'm lucky enough to be in a SLAA group where there's a couple people that are further down the road from me in recovery from anorexia, and they talk a lot about having fun. I hear that F word a lot. So what are you doing today for fun, Eve? I'm like, fun? What are you, 12? You know, fun. What do you watch cartoons? And, you have a coloring book? I bet you have a Dora the Explorer coloring book. You know? Because that's how foreign it feels to me, like that I can't possibly. So I'm learning about what that looks like for me, what feels comfortable, and that it's really about getting my needs met too. Like, why am I acting out? What is it that I really need? You know, people in the program who are really healthy, who have what I want, they will say, what is it that you need? And how can you get it? And so I think that the answer lies in that balance, and that's all I wanted to share. Thanks.
Thanks,
Steve. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Phyllis. I'm a sex and love addict and an anorexic.
Hi, Phyllis.
I've been only in the program for about a year, but it became really clear to me as going through my withdrawal from sex and love addiction that I became more and more anorexic. And we have a meeting, just one meeting, and we kind of flounder around in the meeting trying to understand exactly what anorexia is. It took me a long time. And my mind tends to work overtime, you know, I think like all of ours do, but it's like, what is this? What is this? Because it keeps like, the more you reach for it, you can't understand it. And I know for me, it's like just even for this weekend, I didn't want to come. So it's the instinct to not go out. It's the instinct to, someone invites me, oh, I got this other thing to do at home. And it became clear as time went on, I took off from work and have been at home, that I became more and more safe in home and not wanting to go out. It got, because I'm like observant of my own emotional state, it became a place of like, almost like the mixed master going addiction level emotional reality, having to do with doing my thing all alone. And it, there was a negative mind space associated with it. So I was saying in the group, in the meetings, it was like, how do we set our bottom lines? What do we need to do? And all I could come up with was, you know, make myself go out and make myself call people and make myself connect. Because once I'm connecting, it's so much better. The other thing that I would say is, there is like a plexiglass wall up when I start to get close to people, and then it gets to this certain point, it's like I hit this wall. And I've known this, and in recovery, I get more and more, I have developed friendships with women now because I'm trying to stay away from the guy thing. That we got real close as one woman and I, and she hurt me. And she didn't necessarily even know she hurt me, but we became intimate emotionally. We were talking about really deep stuff, and it hurt so much. And it's like, that's why I don't want to be intimate. It hurts so much, and I can't even talk about it. I can't recover from it because it's touched a place in me that I was keeping protected for a good reason. And I would like to be able to turn around and turn back that day that I got hurt, but I don't know. It's like, okay, I'm gonna try again with someone else, or is that plexiglass wall that, you know, I don't want to let anyone through, especially a man. So, thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing. There's a favorite line in a movie that I watched some years ago, where the woman's dying of cancer, and the guy who loves her can't express it because she's dying of cancer, and I'm going to get choked up even talking about it, but he's acting anorexically, and she's not, and she just says to him, the love now is worth the pain then. So I would suggest that to you as a thought.
Can you say that again?
The love now is worth the pain then. She's going to die, right? And he's going to have to go through the loss. The love now is worth the pain then. And then she says, that's the deal. That's what life is. It's the deal. If you take the risk to love, you're going to feel pain. And that's the deal. And I don't see any way around that in my own personal life. But I'll take the risk, you know, because the result is, you know, kind of living in that independent state without any relationship, I would think. And I'm not just talking about a sexual relationship leading to family and that sort of thing. I mean, I'm talking about any relationship. And I would suggest that finding a mate is not the same as freedom from anorexia. That's an important thing to understand. I also want to throw out there before we finish up that some people come into the program as thinking in terms of themselves as pure sex addicts because they had sexual addiction to pornography, for instance, on the internet. I would suggest that pornography, things like extramarital affairs, these are highly, highly anorexic behaviors. If you think about them, and the degree of detachment you have to have towards the human being in order to continue through those behaviors, you'll get to see some of the anorexia there. I also want to leave you with some tools to paint your tapestry with. And I would suggest that to interact weekly in an authentic way. You know, you were talking about how do you do a bottom line for anorexia, you know. And basically, it's, you know, some people call them top lines, and you know, for me, it would be to essentially express myself and listen in an authentic way with another human being each day, and to interact in a truly social environment with a number of people in an authentic way at least once a week, you know, that kind of thing. These are some different tools that we can use around the top and bottom line ideas. And there's a new top line pamphlet. You can read about some of that stuff. I would also suggest that creativity is a very, very important aspect of recovery from anorexia. I would suggest that creativity is an imitation of God in a way, and that it's one of the very important tools that are, and that sexuality is actually a creative act. And I'm not just talking about procreation. That sexuality is a very creative act when interacting with another person sexually like that. Listening, sharing, being present, these are all creative acts. Certainly art, music, comedy, these are all creative acts. And these are some of the tools that we can paint our tapestry with, our own personal tapestry of recovery from anorexia. Just a quick review for those of you who are in partnership of what a sexual partnership is like under the model, the asymmetric model of recovery from anorexia, that anorexic intersexual acts are always either climax-centered, reliability-centered, performance-centered, as in to hook someone or improve one's sexual reputation, or acquisition-centered, to acquire something. So if you're in a relationship and you see those signs, those are signs of anorexic interpersonal sexual relationship. Climax-centered, reliability, performance, acquisition. That when we are sexual with the person that we love, and God is present in the room, that is a wonderful exercise to break free from sexual anorexia. It's a wonderful tool. And you can actually consciously do that. I actually know a couple that pray, uses bookending, prayer bookending with their sexuality. They actually pray before they get sexual with one another, and then they pray afterwards. Think about the level of presence they have to have with each other to do that, you know? Experiencing sexual pleasure in an interdependent relationship is not a high-risk behavior. When the authenticity is there, the risk goes down. It's when we distort our God-given sexual powers, as Bill Wilson called it in the AA Big Book, that's when the risk comes in. That's when we start getting into high-risk situations. So, what's that?
Thanks.
So, I'm going to leave you with those tools. We've got just 2 minutes left, and if somebody else wants to share, I'd like to give somebody the opportunity to share, because I saw one hand go up kind of near the end there.
Wow, I hate to be the last one. My name is Ned, recovering sex and love addict and anorexic. I feel weird being sharing after you when everybody's kind of, I don't know if I want to do this.
Well, you can overcome your sexual anorexia and just share what's on your mind, because we're all curious.
Hey, maybe that's why I did it. So I just wanted to share that I was imprinted and conditioned as a child that my heterosexuality was a bad thing. And I tried to repress it. And when my sexuality started to come out in deviant ways, that's when I found my way in these S groups. And it's only been recently that I've felt safe addressing the fact that I've repressed my heterosexuality for so long. And people are talking about, you know, top line behaviors. I'm experimenting right now. If there's a woman that I for some reason I wish to talk to her or reach out to her, I try and do it in an appropriate way. Maybe just go up and say hello or something like that. You know, non-threatening. I'm just experimenting with what life would be like if I didn't repress my heterosexuality, you know, 100%, you know, just like it's, you know, that I'm just experimenting with that these days.
Thank you. And I apologize to the group. I got confused about the time we actually went over. So thank you for sharing that with us. And thanks everyone for attending.